You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and the host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO. Follow us on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShibles. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Hit us up there. Double overtime game against the Knicks last night. Plenty to discuss on today's show, but we want to hear your reaction. 331-979-1369. Text messages and voicemails available there. Matt, have to start it off right up the top of the show. Joe Quenneville fired as the Blackhawks head coach here. He may not be the only Chicago coach in this town fired by the time the seasons are over. But certainly surprising news there. I thought maybe Fred Hoiberg would be the first guy out of Chicago as far as 2018-2019 seasons go. But first and foremost, how you doing? What's going on?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Yeah, if you had told me, you know, earlier this summer that Coach Q was going to get fired before Fred Hoiberg got fired, I would tell you were friggin' nuts.
Me too.
I mean, I know that there had been some whispers about, you know, how safe was Coach Q's job, and maybe, you know, if the Hawks got off to another slow start this season, he might have to fall on his sword for the organization. And it's crazy to me because he is like one of the winningest coaches in NHL history. But there comes a point when, you know, when a coach has been coaching the same group of guys, or for the most part, same group of guys for a really long time, at some point that coach just starts to lose the locker room and lose, you know, his voice with his guys. And maybe that's something that, you know, we're experiencing here. I know that, you know, the Hawks have kind of sputtered after they got out of the gate with some, you know, unexpected wins. But I don't know how much of this is on Coach Q, really and truly. Like, this Blackhawks team is just kind of just, in my from my viewpoint, lacking in talent. And Coach Q is one of the best. I have no doubt that he will be scooped up by some team fairly quickly. And it's, you know, it's a sad day because the Coach Q era in Chicago is what brought the Hawks back to relevance again. So I guess now we get to have a fun little experiment to count the days between when Coach Q was fired and when Fred Hoiberg is fired and how long that might be. But yeah, definitely shocking.
Some similar themes going on over there at the United Center, man. Like, can't fire the entire front office. Some of the questionable moves the front office has made obviously comes down on the head coach. Kind of crazy, though. Yeah, you're right. A guy that's been tenured here for a long time, won 3 championships with this Hawks team, second most winningest coach in the NHL. Obviously, buys you some time, but common themes going on there, not putting exactly a talented roster around Joe Quenneville in the last handful of years, and that's kind of parallel to what the Bulls are looking at right now, not putting sizable talent around Fred Hoiberg in order to help him win here. But let's talk about this Knicks double overtime game last night, because this was just, on top of disgusting basketball, you went into double overtime in 116-115. Both teams were god-awful shooting last night, Matt. So walk me through maybe a few highlights from this game before we get into the final few minutes of this game. Maybe Zach LaVine's career high in points last night was pretty nice to see at 41 points. But anything else that you saw, from not only from this Bulls team, but also this Knicks team, and pulling out a pretty scrappy win for the Bulls last night.
Yeah, it's cool that LaVine set his new career high last night at the Garden. You know, we got to watch the emergence of Markkanen when the Bulls were in the Garden last season. You know, the rookies coming out party game, which was fun. And we get another fun result with LaVine's career high 41 last night in New York, which was, another fairly efficient night for Zach. 13-25 from the field, including 4 made threes. A couple of those were during crunch time of the fourth quarter. He hit 2 back-to-back that were really big. And most importantly, 11-14 from the free throw line. A double-digit free throw night for Zach, which you love to see. So that's, you know, the positive takeaway that I had, first and foremost. And, you know, the other one is that, again, both of the rookies, not just Wendell, but also Chandler Hutchison, showed us more stuff last night. Wendell, another double-double. 11-13 in just 22 minutes. He actually ended up fouling out. He got into early foul trouble. But, I mean, Chandler Hutchison, the more I see this kid, we've talked about how we're worried about his shot and how his outside shot is, you know, being worked on by Fred and his coaches right now. But he's, in the meantime, he's not taking bad shots. We saw him get to the painted area a few times last night and hit a couple of little floaters. He's playing spirited defense. He seems like a smart basketball player. I'm starting to have more faith in Hutchison being a solid 3-and-D wing. You know, at this point, he is a D wing that looks okay. If that three-point ball and his shooting form comes back at some point and gets fixed, I think that the ceiling for Hutchison is higher than we thought it was, I don't know, even a couple months ago.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right. And a little bit of the scare, too, in preseason when we kind of came out and saw him not doing a whole lot on the offensive side of the ball, kind of looking exactly like a rookie. And even through the first few games when we saw hints of him here and there, people are like, wow, you know, he can't even crack the rotation in the first handful of games with this depleted of a roster. Is this really a guy that they took 22nd overall and believe in him, or is this just kind of another play? And I think Hutchison, for the last week and a half, has really showed that, you know, he's got some value here. Not only the rebounding, but also, like you had said, taking efficient shots, maybe being able to run the ball in transition on the offensive side of the ball, and also giving you some length in the defensive side, too. So definitely some improvements from Hutchison. I liked his game last night, too, on top of Zach LaVine. A few other guys, too. Antonio Blakeney coming off the bench in the first half, I thought, came in and lit it up again. He finished the game with 6-for-13. He was 1-for-5 from 3, ended up with 17 points, a rebound, and 2 steals, and a block. Blakeney coming in off the bench again, some firepower as far as offense goes, you know. Yeah, he finished about 50% from the field, but still, I think that lightning bolt that you're going to need, I think once Valentine comes back and you've kind of got these rotations a little bit more solidified, I think Blakeney's going to find himself still being able to crack that rotation. And I know he's been quoted saying that over the past few games, that he feels like he's played well enough to be in this rotation. So I thought he had a pretty decent night. But looking at the Knicks side of this, Enes Kanter, man, 23 points, 24 rebounds last night, 7 assists and a steal to cap off probably one of Enes Kanter's best nights as a Knick. And he was just totally dominating. And that was one of the biggest flaws of this Bulls team the entire game last night, was nobody could grab a board to save their life. The Knicks ended up with 62 rebounds total to the Bulls 48, and it looked even better bigger of a margin than what the numbers tell us right now.
Enter Robin Lopez, right? The Bulls were getting crushed on the boards all night long. No surprise, no change there. They've been getting crushed on the boards all season. And late in the fourth quarter, Wendell Carter Jr. fouls out. And instead of going back to Felicio, who we once again last night saw get the nod ahead of Rolo in the rotation, Fred goes to the trusted Wiley vet who comes into this game and makes a few big plays down the stretch. Just 2 points, but 5 rebounds, 3 of them on the offensive end to create an extra possession for the Bulls, 2 defensive rebounds, one of them was huge, and 2 blocks, one of which also huge. Like, Robin Lopez came into this game ice cold, hadn't played in a while. It seemed like he was left for dead in Fred's rotation and was a difference maker late in this game. If Hoiberg went back to Felicio instead of going to Robin Lopez late in that game, the Bulls don't win this game. I truly believe that. And Robin Lopez, I'm flabbergasted right now. Like, I think he proved last night that when Fred was going to Felicio in that stretch of games behind Wendell, like, was he doing so only to appease his bosses who said, hey, Fred, you should probably make, you know, Felicio, you should probably legitimize him in any way you can because we still have this guy on contract for 2 seasons after this season. And right now we look really dumb to signing him to for signing him to that because he looks unplayable. Try and find a way to play him. Well, guess what? Fred, more than once this season, has already said to his bosses, based on his actions, I don't care who you sign to what amount of money. I don't care if it's Jabari. I don't care if it's Felicio. I'm going to put the guy in who I think gives me a chance to win. And he did that with Rolo last night. So, I'm sorry, Felicio, the experiment should be over. Rolo proved that he's more valuable than Felicio last night.
Yeah, we'll get into some of the rotations on the back end of a break in a little bit. The other thing that I had to mention, too, is the Bulls just squeaked out this win, and the Knicks didn't have Kevin Knox. Kevin Knox only played 5 minutes in this game. I know he's been dealing with a rolled ankle, but also, too, their best scorer in Tim Hardaway Jr. did not play last night.
No Hardaway.
So yeah. Just to barely scrape out this win against...
Not to mention Kristaps, of course, on the show.
To just scrape out a win against a team who just got embarrassed by an awful Washington Wizards team the night before speaks a little bit of volumes, but I want to talk about the impact of this win on the backside of a break. I want to remind our listeners, too, you know, NBA season in full swing, the NFL at their halfway point so far, and all the other leagues looking at maybe future bets, looking at college basketball starting up tonight with the 4 best teams in college basketball playing. Should be a great night for college basketball, minus the Bulls not playing tonight. But whatever the case may be, if you're looking for a place to bet, go no other place than MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why I always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust my guys, they are your best bet this season. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been just as good to me. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win and they pay. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for your fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score in each game. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code LOCKEDON to activate this offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON when creating your account to claim your bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. MyBookie will match the listener's first deposit up to 100% up to $1,000. Go do it right now. You want to win, you want to get paid, use promo code LOCKEDON at mybookie.ag. Be back here on Locked On Bulls in 60 seconds. Stay with us. Back here on Locked On Bulls, 331-979-1369. Hit us up there with your reaction, your voicemails, your text messages, or you can hit us up on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. So before break, just wanted to kind of break down some of the good things that we saw from this Bulls team so far. Being able to pull out a win against the Knicks team on the road, I think, speaks volumes to what the Bulls have been doing over the past week, staying in a lot of these games against competitive teams. The Knicks, not so much a competitive team. They've played better at home than they have on the road. So without Tim Hardaway Jr. last night, without seeing a lot of Kevin Knox, only seeing 5 minutes of him, I thought for sure, I was like, okay, this might be a night where the Bulls are going to be able to pull off a win. I didn't think it was going to take two overtimes to do that, but nonetheless, pulling off this win last night, Matt, I think in a sense is a good thing for this young Bulls team. Think about the games over the last week. The crushing loss against the Warriors, the embarrassment at home, the nearly knocking off one of the best teams in the NBA so far this season in the Nuggets, losing in heartbreak to the Pacers on Friday night, losing to the Rockets in a close game on Saturday night. Picking up this win to me was crucial for this team. Not necessarily for the wins and loss column, but more so for the morale of this entire team. You continue to lose games in close fashion and not being able to close out like this. At some point, it's gonna wear on these guys. And that's why I was happy to see the Bulls be able to pull this one out, because you lose this game in double overtime fashion. Can you imagine that built up upon the last week of games? Like, to me, that would be a crushing blow for this Bulls team, and I'm glad they were able to pull this one out last night in New York.
I'm sorry, Jordan. I can't give them any credit for that. I truly want to, and I see what you're saying. And in any other fashion, if this were a game that was close late, the Bulls pulled out and were victorious because they made the right plays down the stretch, I could get behind what you're saying, but pardon my French, fuck that. This game was ugly. Neither team deserved to win this game last night. It took 10 extra minutes of hideous basketball. This was the worst basketball game we've watched this season. I know that it was higher scoring than the victory over the Hawks, but at least there were stretches of that game where the Bulls played better basketball. This game was ugly from start to finish, and neither team deserved to win. The Bulls came out on top because those hapless Knicks, who before losing to us lost to the Wizards, made more mistakes than we did. The Bulls made crucial, costly mistakes at every turn down the fourth quarter stretch and in both overtime periods. Turnovers from Zach LaVine. Boneheaded decisions by Cam. Oh. Why is Cam Payne driving ISO on the final possession of the fourth quarter when he should be giving the ball to Zach LaVine? Why is Cam Payne immediately chucking up a long three-pointer right when the Bulls got a big offensive rebound? Everything about that game screamed to me incompetency. Incompetency. So no, don't give me that silver lining bullshit about, well, hey, this is a young team that learned how to win. And yes, Zach LaVine was talking about how they're a young team that needs to learn how to win. They need to close games. And technically, they did that. And I'll give Zach a little bit of credit for attacking the basket, as you said. And, you know, maybe he got bailed out. Maybe he didn't. But he stepped to the free throw line and sank the game-winning free throws. Good for Zach. Really liking what I'm seeing from Zach and his aggressiveness. But no, as a team, no silver lining. It's not just me being a salty fan who thinks they should be tanking and worried about this win coming back to haunt them, because the Knicks probably going to be ahead of us in the lottery standings when it's all said and done. No, that's not what this is about. You can't give a team credit for pulling out a victory when they did everything they could to lose that game. Don't give me that crap.
I mean, you can be mad about the actual basketball on the floor, but as far as a team win goes and what it does for morale, you have to look at that. You have a roster compiled to the second youngest team in the NBA right now, and you're missing four of your main pieces as far as this core goes. To sit here and tell me that pulling out this win didn't mean something for the Bulls last night, I think that's a little far-fetched. Like, yeah, as bad as the basketball was on the floor, and I totally 100% agree with you, this is the worst game by far we watched all season long. That Atlanta Hawks game I thought was the worst game, but now I'm probably putting this Knicks game up there. The Bulls got they got out-rebounded, they got outscored, a lot of their young guys looked better than the Bulls last night, and basically Zach LaVine dragged them to a win last night. You know, even with his two crucial turnovers in overtime by stepping out of bounds, and we'll get to that in a minute, but I have to sit here and believe that at least pulling out a win, no matter how ugly it looks, it helps the confidence of those guys in that locker room at least a little bit. Like, you can be angry about the play on the floor, but picking up a win as far as morale goes, I find it crazy that you're arguing with me with that, because if you fall five in a row in four out of those five games were close games in a matter of a week, you can't sit here and tell me that that doesn't do anything for their morale, that guys are just going to say, you know what, fuck this, forget it, man. We can't win with anything, so I'm just going to go out there and do it myself. I mean, and that may still happen now, no. But still, like, you've got to learn exactly what Zach LaVine said. You have to learn how to win, and you have to learn how to close out games. And as ugly as that game was last night, you're going to see a lot of those even when the core players are back. So being able to pull out wins when it is a mess of a night, I think helps building up upon the four-game losing streak that they just saw in the past week.
Jordan, I'm not arguing with you that that was good for morale. That wasn't my point. Yeah, if you win a close game after you've been losing a lot of close games and you end a losing streak on the road in a place like Madison Square Garden, absolutely good for team morale. That wasn't my point. My point was when you're analyzing the basketball that was played on the floor last night, as a fan who knows the game, you can't credit them for saying, oh, yeah, close game. The Bulls really pulled that one out. This is a young team that's learning how to win. No, no. They showed me nothing about learning how to win last night. They got lucky. The Knicks made a bunch of bad mistakes. One more mistake than the Bulls made in a game that was so gross across the board. So I'm not arguing the point that, hey, a win against a close game on the road after a losing streak, after you've dropped some similarly close games, good for team morale. Fine. Fine. But from the perspective of analyzing what was going on late in that game, this was not the young Bulls learning how to win. No. No. They tripped into and fell into a victory that was not deserved.
I agree with you on that fact. Like, the basketball was bad, and yes, they made one less mistake than the Knicks did, and it literally came down to that point. The Knicks made a mistake with 0.1 seconds left in double overtime to send Zach LaVine to the free throw line. So I agree in that fashion. Like, this isn't learning how to win. This is just pulling out a win against a grossly terrible Knicks team right now. But just look at the pure fact of picking up a win for them, for the guys on the Bulls team, rather than the basketball itself. Yes, the basketball itself was ugly. That's not learning how to win. But picking up a win for morale helps, you know, regardless of what you want to say. Four in a row, losing five in a row, especially in a fashion of where you could have potentially went to a triple overtime against a terrible Knicks team and lost on the road. That doesn't do you any good. So I'm not giving them credit for pulling out a win and saying, quote unquote, that they are learning how to win, because this wasn't learning how to win. This was just making one less mistake, like you had said. But I still think there is some value in picking up this win last night, at least for the young core, to feel like they've got a little bit of a tiny bit of confidence boost here, picking up a win and maybe being able to build upon that. But yes, you're certainly right. The basketball was god awful last night.
And why the heck was Cam on the floor for 41 minutes, including late in that game? Archie Diakono only played 17 minutes. Cam played 41 and was making boneheaded plays all over the floor late in that game. No, that's not Fred learning how to win. That's not a young team learning how to win. That's winning in spite of what you're doing.
Yeah, Cameron Payne, man. There is no explanation for two almost costly mistakes for the Bulls last night. First of all, you're going isolation in a tie freaking game. Tie game. Cameron Payne is going isolation. Zach LaVine is clearly on the opposite side of the three-point line, waving his hands for Cameron Payne to pass him. Instead, Cameron Payne goes for an isolation and then gets stuffed at the rim. If that wasn't bad enough, then in the first overtime, he decides to take a three-pointer when he was contested. Two guys. And people argue with me, well, you got to get a shot up. You can't run the clock down. Yeah, you can't run the clock down. You had 25 seconds left, 14 seconds left on the shot clock. Great. You don't need Cameron Payne going ISO and then shooting a contested three when you're tied. Like, those are two monumental mistakes that can't go unnoticed from the coaching staff, from anybody. Like, those are two in a row. Cameron Payne tried to play hero ball, and I don't even know what's going through his head either. Like, man, you really think that you're going to play hero ball and win? You got stuffed at the rim and took an awful three-point shot two times in a row, two possessions in a row, nearly costing the Bulls a win here. So I don't know what was going through his mind there. Feeling like he needed to take that three-pointer? No. Feeling like he needed to go to isolation and try to beat somebody at the basket? No. None of that works for Cameron Payne, so I just don't understand that play call. And I'm not going to put that on Fred either, because that was clearly all Cameron Payne.
Well, no, you can't put Cam's decision to dribble drive ISO on the last possession of the game instead of getting the ball to Zach on Fred, but you can't put it on Fred for having Cam Payne out there. That is 110% Fred's fault. I don't like what it appears that campaign has no repercussions for his poor play, because guess what? As long as Chris Dunn has been out, he's still in that starting lineup, and he played 41 minutes last night. 41 minutes of garbage basketball and bad decisions. At what point does Fred say, hey, maybe I shouldn't be playing Cam down the stretch of these close games because it's ruining us? It didn't cost the win last night. Almost did. Cost him a win against Indiana. Cost him a win against Denver. What the heck is Cam doing out there late in games? That is on Fred.
I think it's a cuttable offense when you go out there and as bad as Cameron Payne has shown himself over the last 2 years in a Bulls uniform, man, we've tried to give the guy credit here time and time again. When you continue to make mistakes like that, not get the ball into your best shooter, your best scorer's hands late in games, when you're tied both times, is inexcusable, man. That's waivable. That's cuttable, in my opinion. And to me, you're right. Fred Hoiberg having him on the floor. But my thing is like, what are your other options? Yeah, sure, Archie Diacono, fine. He'll play some bully defense for you. He'll give you the 120% effort. But look at the guys that were on the floor, too. Guys with a ton of length. And I know I made fun of Emmanuel Mudiay last night. He was, I can't even believe that guy's still on an NBA roster, even though he did drop 16 points on the Bulls. But still, some of the length that the Bulls had on the floor, I can understand. Because looking at Archie Diacono, you know, you could end up with a three-pointer straight in your face, and that's game over. So you needed a little bit of length, so I could see that. But still, like, Cameron Payne has shown you nothing, and he's shown you nothing in crunch time, too. So those two plays, though, Fred has to look at that on Monday night and say, you know what, maybe it's time to make a decision, time to make a change here in crunch time, whether or not to put Cameron Payne in the game or not. And I think you've said this. You've said this multiple times over the last 2 weeks. You've asked in crunch time games, I think even going back to the Nuggets and back to the Pacers game, you've come on this show and said, you know, why is Cameron Payne in the game? Why is he in the game in crunch time? And now why? I'm seriously starting to believe it.
It's like Fred took one miracle second half performance where Cam drilled seven threes out of nowhere. Because, like, I think the movie Sixth Man kind of thing was going on there, where, like, Cam's, like, ghost best friend was pouring all those threes in for him. Or maybe it was Angels in the Outfield kind of stuff. I don't know. But Fred took one half where Cam was a three-point-making demigod and has used that as a reason to play Cam heavy minutes and late minutes when time and again, since that one good Cam night, Cam is just failing out loud and costing this team possessions and costing this team points. Oh, and by the way, not doing a whole lot on the defensive end either.
We got to take another short break here on Locked On Bulls. We come back still breaking down a few other things. Want to get to a few notes too. Just looking at the season so far, 11 games into it so far. Bulls 3-8, 2-3 on the road. So touch a little bit more on this Knicks game. Maybe take a look at a preview of Wednesday night's game and a few other things to wrap up the show. Stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds. Back here on Locked On Bulls, 331-979-1369 is the place to hit us up. Text messages and voicemails there. Matt, a few other things from this Knicks game last night. I had mentioned it earlier, but I have no idea how Emmanuel Mudiay is still on a roster. I know he dropped 16 points, but man, is that guy awful. He is just buns as far as guards go. You know, and he made the biggest mistake of them all last night is fouling Zach LaVine at the rim with 0.1 seconds left. On top of that, a few other boneheaded plays. Him trying to play transition defense on Antonio Blakeney last night was friggin' hilarious. He had his back turned to the basket. Talk about a shacked and a fool moment. Emmanuel Mudiay had that moment last night. I was surprised that Mitchell Robinson, as well as he's played for the Knicks so far this season, he only got in there for 11 minutes, and maybe that's more credit to Enes Kanter last night, who, like I had mentioned before, 24 rebounds and 23 points and 7 assists last night to cap off his night. I was a little disappointed to see Wendell Carter Jr. get into foul trouble as early as he did, because he could have helped out the Bulls a ton, and him getting fouled out before even overtime happened killed the Bulls and almost cost them the game too. So not some great decision making on his part, and only played 22 minutes last night. I think you're going to see that. This is the first instance where we've seen him get bullied to the point where he got knocked out of the game and made some bad decisions, and it ultimately could have cost the Bulls last night, but it didn't. But I was a little bit disappointed in his game last night.
Yeah, not the best. And just to touch on Moutier real quick, it's crazy to see where he is now. Based, I mean, like Jordan, unless I'm remembering this incorrectly, wasn't everybody like so high on Moutier coming out of that draft class? People were talking about him being like, you know, the next best thing since sliced bread in that draft. And I was like, I don't know if I really see it. And man, it's hard to make yourself stand out on a Knicks team this bad for being really bad. But oh my goodness.
You know, following up back to Wendell Carter Jr. real quick, disappointed from you, surprised that he fouled out with only playing 22 minutes, surprised that Enes Kanter and Mitchell Robinson, some of the other guys in the Knicks front court, were able to get after Wendell Carter Jr. as much as they did last night.
I mean, disappointed, sure. Surprised, no. Look, I mean, you think about the fact that Wendell is a rookie. Rookies who are aggressive on the defensive end typically get into foul trouble on a regular basis. And because guess what? As long as Chris Dunn is out, Wendell is the only person on this team actively trying to play defense on a per possession basis. So when he's asked to be the rim protector, when he's asked to, you know, and again, you know, worth mentioning, he's gone up against, not necessarily last night, but gone up against some pretty stiff, heavy competition already as far as some of the bigs he's faced in the Bulls' early season schedule. I'm not surprised that he's getting in foul trouble. And that, you know, he's had some growing pains, but all of the monster, you know, in your face blocks we've seen from him, what we've seen from him protecting the paint, grabbing rebounds, running the floor, and the development of his offensive game. I love that little, you know, mini hook shot he's working with his left hand right now from the left block. It looks really solid. We're seeing his offensive game develop. If he can start knocking down shots from further, you know, further outside, if he has any mid-range and he can start actually knocking down threes consistently, offensively, the sky's the limit for Wendell, and he's already the best defensive player on this team.
It'll be interesting once Markkanen comes back, you know, even Dunn for the defensive sake of the ball, but also to help Wendell Carter Jr. around the rim too, man. Jabari Parker isn't doing him any favors around the rim. And none of the guards or none of the forwards and Justin Holiday are helping him out either. So maybe when you get some of your other reliable power forwards back that can help anchor that front court, Wendell Carter Jr. you'll see a little bit of a step forward as far as his player development goes, and maybe blossom a little bit more so than he has right now. But yeah, Jabari Parker not doing him any favors in the front court, trying to help him out. Not even defensively, too, is like it's Wendell Carter Jr. 2-on-1 in the front court every single time. On top of that, I just wanted to kind of finish up our episode with a few advanced stats, some stuff just kind of wrapping up the first 10 games of the season so far. Matt, I made a point on Twitter last night before the Knicks game, and just talking about Zach LaVine and overall what he was going to try to do as far as player development this year and developing his game. This is a crucial year for Zach LaVine, and I think he notices that so far too. And so far, everything we've seen has been awesome from him so far. But the one thing that I always said, looking back at the 25 games that he played with the Bulls last year, and even going back to his time with the Timberwolves pre-ACL injury, What was the one thing that Zach LaVine was doing really well before he got hurt? He was not only shooting the ball at a pretty solid clip from the three-point line, but he was getting to the rim at an astounding rate. And he's doing that even double time this year. So listen to this. So from less than 5 feet from the basket, 26-2017, before the ACL injury, Zach LaVine was attempting 4.6 field goal attempts 5 feet or less from the rim, shooting 60.9% from the field. That's pretty good. 17-18 in the 25 games with the Bulls. 5.9 attempts at the rim, 49.3 field goal percentage. Not that great. Taking a step back. This year so far through 10 games, and it'll be updated with 11 now, 8.4 attempts at the rim. That's nearly double what he was taking before he got hurt. And shooting 63.1% at the rim 5 feet or less. That is a huge difference to me in Zach LaVine's game. And his decision making to go to the rim more often than you know, taking a pull-up three or taking a contested pull-up mid-range shot shows growth in Zach LaVine's game. And I think he's starting to notice that too, is if I go to the rim, I'm going to get calls. I'm going to get foul calls. Guys are going to try to hack me, and I have my speed back to be able to beat guys the way he did in overtime too. How about the two moves to cross inside and score those back-to-back layups in overtime last night against the Knicks? That's one of just tens of examples so far this season that I've liked from LaVine so far.
Yeah, I mean, if you had to say pick one element of one player's game so far this season that has been the most encouraging for the Bulls through 10 games, it's Zach LaVine attacking the basket. You were talking in the offseason about how you felt like LaVine's three-point shot was going to come back with a vengeance, and so far you've been right about that. But, you know, as important, if not more so, is the fact that we have seen a very aggressive Zach LaVine who, especially recognizing on nights when his outside shot isn't falling, is passing up outside shots to attack the rim. And that was how the Bulls won this game last night. It is how the Bulls will get points on nights when, whether it's LaVine or Holiday or whoever else is struggling with their shot, LaVine can break guys down off the dribble and get to the free throw line. And that is something that he should be able to do all season long.
11 for 14 last night at the free throw line. So good to see that again from Zach LaVine. A couple other things. Just wanted to clean up some advanced stats for you, some random stats for you through the first 10 games. So here they are. Through 10 games, a minimum of 15 minutes or more played. Here's four guys, four stats from Bulls players. Too good, too bad. I'll give you the first two that are good. LaVine's usage percentage, which is at 32.6%, ranks third highest in the NBA. That's crazy. And that's exactly what the Bulls need in order to pull out wins like they did last night, is to use Zach LaVine at a super high clip. And I think over the summer we talked about looking at LaVine's usage rating and saying, you know, if there's injuries or even returning fully healthy, you're probably going to see an uptick in LaVine's usage. And I said I wouldn't be surprised if it went over 30%, and that's what we're looking at right now. We'll be curious to see once Markkanen returns, once Dunn returns, Portis, how that usage flexes a little bit. Still, third highest usage percentage in the NBA so far. Archie Diakono's assist-to-turnover ratio, 6.86, ranks third in the NBA so far this season. Pretty crazy. I know people had thrown out that out there this weekend when he was playing. Here's the two bad stats for you.
But you know, Fred doesn't see it as a good point to, you know, have him closing your games instead of Cam, my middle name is Turnover Pain.
Did you ever imagine yourself talking about Archie Diakono closing out games this season?
No, it's insane. But that's how bad Cam has been.
True. And here's to follow up for you. Cameron Payne's 119.4 defensive rating ranks fourth worst in the NBA this season so far for guys who've played 15 or more minutes in a game. Fourth worst in the NBA. You know who also was top 10 or bottom 10 as far as worst defensive rating? His pal Justin Holiday. Fourth worst defensive rating in the NBA so far for Cameron Payne, and a bottom 15 net rating for Justin Holiday at -16.6. So that's your advanced stats through 10 games so far this season.
That's fun. Hey, while we're on the subject of advanced stats, we got to talk about this Bulls TPA through their first 11 games. For those of you who might not be super into NBA's advanced stats but are curious or might want to get a little bit more info there, if you're on Twitter, NBA Math is a great Twitter follow. They break down every night each player's TPA through the season. TPA, of course, standing for total points added, which is like a fairly new analytical stat for basketball, which basically takes into account offensive points added, or OPA, plus defensive points saved, or DPS, and adjusting them based off of plus offensive and defensive box plus minuses, accounting for the number of possessions that each player is on the floor. So that's what TPA is. It is a combination of total offensive points added and defensive points saved. They had the graph up for the Bulls after their win over the Knicks last night, and guess who is in the bottom left corner, aka worst place to be on such graph for this Bulls team? Because it's none other than Jabubi Parker.
Oh, the $20 million man.
A net a net TPA of what is it, like minus 38-ish? And he has the third most minutes on this team. The first two players leading this team in minutes, Zach LaVine and Justin Holiday, have at least done enough offensively to make up for their bad defense. They both have net positives in TPA leading this team in minutes. The person who has the third most minutes on this team, Jabari Parker, somewhere around 340 minutes, has the worst net TPA on this team at nearly minus 40. People say, I don't really believe in these advanced stats. I like the eye test. Okay, take your pick. The eye test with Jabari, bad. The analytics test with Jabari, oh, it backs up the bad eye test. For sure it backs up the bad eye test.
Yeah, and the only two players on this list with defensive points saved is Wendell Carter Jr., and I think Robin Lopez was teetering on that line a little bit, and same thing with Bobby Portis before the injury, too. We'll tweet this out at Locked On Bulls if you want to get a better visual of some of these players where their total points added in defensive points saved across minutes. It's a pretty cool graph, and I've been using this since last year, Matt, and I know you have too. NBA Matt does a great job, and it's just another way to categorize the way the Bulls are looking on the floor individually and as a team. I'm at loss for words with Jabari Parker, man. I don't know what to say about the guy anymore, because it's like a broken record. It's the same thing we talk about every single game. And I know you probably have touched on it from the Pacers and the Rockets game this weekend, which was just as bad as the first eight games of the season. So as soon as Markkanen and as soon as Portis come back, you know, Fred Hoiberg is going to have a major decision on his hands. Because if I'm him, and you've got Markkanen and Portis who are going to give you quality minutes at the four, and you know it's going to be a disaster at the three, I don't know where Parker fits in, man. I know he makes $20 million and the Bulls want to see him out there, but at this point, it's brutal. You can't possibly sacrifice Portis and Markkanen's minutes at the four to appease the front office for a year in a quote-unquote tryout to let Jabari Parker continue out there. He hasn't shown you anything to give you a reason why, yeah, you know what, Parker should be out there. We should give him another shot. He's given us no reason to give him the benefit of the doubt this season.
No.
No reason.
No, people that want to point out, well, hey, look at that good pass Jabari made, or, hey, you know, he's above average leading the break. No, that's not true. He's, like, started to, like, throw all these terrible lob passes in the last couple of games where it's like, dude, Jabari, what the hell are you doing? And defensively, we know how bad he is there. It's not just a lack of defensive skill. It's a lack of defensive effort. And we've talked about how Fred is just refusing to even try the experiment of him at the three. And when Markkanen and Bobby come back, obviously Markkanen is a cornerstone. Bobby, people are on the fence about whether or not they want the Bulls to invest in a big contract for a guy who won't be a starter. And how much money do you really want to pay a sixth man? But even still, Bobby has so far looked to be, even, you know, he's had a rough start to the season, not with the injury, but he wasn't shooting the ball all that well to start after his hot preseason. I still have more faith in Bobby Portis being a better net positive or a better net scorer than Jabari Parker. And those people who have floated the idea of, well, you know, Jabari's still a former number two overall pick. He's got some offensive weapon. What? Okay, so people are saying we should trade him? Who in the league is watching the tape on Jabari through these first dozen games and saying, I need that guy. Get me that guy. Because the answer is no one. No one in their right mind will take Jabari Parker from the Bulls and give the Bulls anything other than, I don't know, some kind of venereal disease in a Jabari Parker trade.
It's not even going to happen at $20 million, too. At that price point, hell no. Mm-mm. Even if it is 1 year, hell no. The other thing, too, just to wrap up, talking about Bobby Portis really quick. I saw this article by Deadspin yesterday that came out.
Don't call it an article. Don't call it an article.
I saw this terrible blog post.
Thank you.
Put up by Deadspin. Listing players in the NBA who are considered, quote-unquote, from Deadspin's, quote, butt. Bobby Portis and Denzel Valentine were both on that list.
So was Jabari Parker.
And Jabari Parker was on that list. Bobby Portis quote tweeted it and said, LOL. Like, you're a paid writer and you get paid to write about this? Like, not only not even being in touch with the NBA, but you put a guy on the list who lit it up in preseason, had a great year off the bench for the Bulls last season and got hurt, and maybe you're a recency bias because he hasn't been on the floor. He's going to be put on this list. The list was just in garbage, and I don't even encourage you to go read it. Don't even give him the click of clicking on the article either, because it was such a poorly written, stupid idea. I don't know. But there's a handful of other players on that list. I'm like, has this person ever watched the NBA in their entire life, or are they just throwing a list together to get clicks?
I mean, to me, it is Deadspin trying to stay relevant. Like, even for their very low bar of what you can call sports media, sports journalism, that was like a 2-year-old flung his poopy diaper at the internet and called it sports media content. No. Yeah, like, they actually just used the headline, "These players are butt." Like, what is that? And here we are talking about it on our podcast, which is dumb. You know, Bobby quoted it and laughed at it. But if this wasn't a direct attempt from Deadspin to put out something so egregiously stupid just for the sake of getting people to react to it, it is shock value. It is inciting a reaction, because guess what? Deadspin has become very quickly the laughingstock of not just sports media, but media in general. That's the only conceivable way that I could say whoever was in charge of giving the green light to make that a thing that was put on the internet, that is the only way that they could have said, yeah, let's do this, because we believe it will incite reaction. Because that, I mean, it was an embarrassment. They should delete their account. They should remove themselves from the internet. It was that bad.
But I felt like I had to mention it at the end of this episode, so... Well, we've got Bulls basketball tomorrow night. Make sure, for all of those out there, I know today is election day. Get out there and vote. Very important day today. So get out there and vote whenever you have time. If you've already voted, then you've done your job. But most importantly, I know, Matt, you said you've already voted. I'm getting out there today as soon as we're done with this episode. Once again, election day today. Get out and vote, please.
Go vote. I'm going to be drinking some stiff whiskeys tonight watching these Bulls come in.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. You can follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's Thursday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. Be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Morty 7:42.
Fans on the TV, you hear some of these guys behind us.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com